Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, August 25th, 2007. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. I'm the economics co-editor for Executive Intelligence News Service. And today is a very special LaRouche Show. We're live, as you know, for the full hour. It's now 3. We'll be on till 4. And this is an historic occasion, because we have as guests in Africa, in Europe, Scandinavia, and here with me live in the studio from the LaRouche Youth Movement War Room, we have people who are the founders of the LaRouche Youth Movement in Africa. This was announced that the LaRouche Youth Movement constituted itself in Africa earlier this year, I believe March, and so we're very, extremely glad to welcome these people on the show for our topic of world economic reconstruction from the vantage point of the LaRouche Youth Movement in Africa. So first, I'm very happy to welcome from the Republic of South Africa, Samuel Lepele. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And are you speaking from Johannesburg or near there?
Near there.
And I also welcome from who's from Zimbabwe and has been there recently. She's speaking to us right at the moment from Sweden. Portia Torumbwa.
Hi.
Hi. That's very clear, and thank you. And we have a person who's just returned recently from South Africa, but he's speaking to us from his native Denmark. Simone Jensen, welcome.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
I'm very happy, as you can tell. And right here next to me from the LaRouche Youth Movement War Room, which is really hopping right now due to the world financial situation and due to the tremendous uptake of LaRouche's ideas for emergency measures, especially for the housing collapse, Lewis Wilden. Welcome, Lewis.
Thank you.
And is it the case that, Lewis, you're often a liaison with people abroad, but also especially Africa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's begin there, please, with Samuel speaking to us near Johannesburg, because would you begin with the formation of the LaRouche Youth Movement in Africa? I think we're talking about South Africa. What's been involved in that? What do you want people to know?
I started being introduced to Mr. LaRouche's ideas in 2003 through the old man that has passed away. We called him Mr. Farouk Sekwatle. I believe we called him Philemon Sekwatle.
Uh-huh.
Yes. It all started with him. We were like studying under him. It was 4 of us there, the youngest one, and also the older members. And after the old man passed away, there was like, a breach in contact, you know.
Yes.
And we couldn't, you know, do anything about it after some time. That's when we, the younger ones in the group started to, you know, get educated independently, you know, started to organize around universities. We went to various universities distributing whatever material we have, you know, so that people can know that, you know, there's a man called LaRouche and, you know, is advocating for the development of Africa, you know. And afterwards, we decided that for security reasons and also to have direct contact, you know, we should call the war room and you know, and that's where it started, you know.
Well, that's great. So that's this year. And then most recently, you've had a larger meeting. Is that the case?
Yes, we were very happy to have Simone there. It was quite a breakthrough, you know. It sort of gave us a larger scope of what's going on in the States, you know. And we benefited greatly from it, you know what I'm saying?
And Simone, Samuel mentions you're just there, but you're also, let's jump right to it. You're organizing a delegation, you all, to be represented for world reconstruction at the Schiller Institute conference September 15 and 16 in Germany.
Go ahead. Very exciting the possibility to address the problems we have now in this is integrating a financial system with the conference in September with the solutions that are will not only bring out the Bretton Woods solution from LaRouche, but will also bring hope to I would say the continent of Africa, and therefore we have been able to organize a special African delegation from the emerging movements, LaRouche movements, now working on LaRouche's ideas in Africa, to come and participate in the conference and be a part of this weekend seminar discussion with LaRouche around these ideas.
That's great. Maybe, Portia, this is the place you might want to address the situation in all of Africa or Southern Africa or Zimbabwe. As many of you know, there was an email that came in even before the show started from Ryan in London, greetings to Ryan, about what the development perspective could be. You may want to address that from what the dire situation that Africa's been forced into by decades of neocolonial globalization, but however you want, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I would just start by looking at it from what's going on, especially in recent weeks, with the financial system. And it's no coincidence that, you know, as the system is coming down, you know, you have an effort to control nations and their resources, you know, and one big way that's been used is war. But, of course, the other big irony is that the institutions of the Bretton Woods system that Roosevelt had implemented initially for, you know, having sovereign nation states, building them up, has been hijacked. They, like the IMF and the World Bank, they have been used to basically enslave governments. And if you've read the book by John Perkins about the economic hitmen, it's inherent in the system that use the political conflicts in especially African nations to basically take raw materials from the back door. And this is something that in Zimbabwe, it has been an issue. An issue starting, you know, from when we wanted to have independence from Rhodesia. We were formerly known as Southern Rhodesia. And then in 1965, we were, taken away from the mothership, but most of with the ideas of colonialism intact. So what is really necessary, if anybody who's listening wants to do something for Africa, for countries like Zimbabwe who are struggling, where most people don't find bread in the stores, they don't find cooking oil, they don't find, you know, basic commodities to feed their families. If you want to do anything about that situation, one thing is to understand that you have to reject, first and foremost, the way the whole financial system is being run. I mean, a lot of things like at the G8 or you know, people like Bono who are talking about piecemeal solutions, microcredit or whatever, that's not going to get anywhere as long as we're in this whole, the way the IMF system works right now. And so what's really necessary is to go it the way LaRouche has been talking about for a very, very long time, is that you need a holistic approach. And one thing that Africa as well as Zimbabwe is in dire need of is a reliable transport system. Because that, if you can't move from A to B, then, you know, whether you have food or not, it's not going to get anywhere. And this is something that needs to be integrated throughout Africa, but also going into Asia and Europe, so that we can actually have technology transfer and all these different things to be able to do something about it. And it's not a question of money. There's a whole lot of money being pumped into the system right now that's going into endless black holes. It's a question of, I think, question of political will, and that's something that we are hoping to mobilize, getting the forces together at the conference in Germany happening in September, and hopefully people will help us to get that going and to participate in building this movement. So,
continuing on that, does one of you want to say about, you mentioned reliable transport, that presumes power, electricity, and so forth, and you have this
Absolutely.
Wonderful world irony that shouldn't be an irony, it should be a way ahead, that South Africa is doing groundbreaking work on the fourth generation kind of nuclear power plant called the Pebble Bed Reactor in English. Is that the case, Samuel, or Simone?
I said the South African electricity company, Eskom, are currently at a very advanced stage developing the high-temperature reactor, where they have been very smart and intelligent in South Africa, actually, by taking this technology, a fourth-generation nuclear reactor, from Germany, who, in the midst of a greeny paradigm, has rejected this new technology. South Africa has simply copied the technology by taking experts and are now ready to produce and put into line the first reactor, and have planned a series of 25 of the high temperature nuclear reactors as a way to address the energy crisis. I think also LaRouche has pointed this out, that there are a lot of dreams and hopes for the for Africa to develop it for the so-called developing nations. But if we don't provide a very cheap and reliable energy source for these countries, there is not going to be any recovery, and therefore going nuclear on the continent will be very necessary. And I would just add to this, to the question of the situation of the big companies, the John Perkins book, and the question of modern colonialization going on the African continent in globalization, that more money is going out of the continent than it's going into the continent, that we are systematically looting the continent with the system right now. We could also be joyful to say the system is going down, the system is gone, is collapsing. We now have a historical chance to reshape the conditions, to create a new conditions for the actual reconstruction of the continent. And the Bretton Woods financial system does not only provide us with a financial system that will stop the speculation, the speculative mode that the big companies are utilizing, the utilization that's been going on, but it will also be the platform, the frame condition to launch mega projects to create a transcontinental railway system on Africa, to have large-scale water desalinations, to reconstruct and finally create the river systems, canal systems that will provide the necessary water logistics. These kind of mega projects are actually the only real answers we can provide to the crisis. And therefore, it is the four-nation solution that we need to go along with, if we want, there's no local solution to this crisis.
Right. Do you want to add more, anything about that you want people to know about the physical geography that's been alluded to here, in terms of both the great vast mineral wealth that's been used just for extraction, or in fact, of course, the vast water wealth, the famous Zaire Basin? If you just diverted a little bit of that northward, the lower Sahara would be a garden.
Actually, yeah, I could say something about that, which is incredible. What not only just what exists in terms of mineral wealth and agricultural wealth, but what we can possibly create. Like what Simone was talking about with these great projects. I mean, talk about the potential you have. You have one project that was developed by the Fusion Energy Foundation back in the 1970s called the Second Nile Project, which is a grand title, and that's a perfect title for this project. Because literally the idea is to take the Congo River, which flows so fast into the ocean that the colonizers had trouble sailing into it, right, that you take it and you divert it into the Sahel, into Lake Chad, which has been drying up over a series of generations. Well, just two more generations once you divert it, in other words, 50 years. And if the water continues to flow into the Sahel, Lake Chad will become a very, very substantial lake again. And at that point, or maybe even before, you know, you started before, what you want to do is you want to build a canal that comes out of Lake Chad and curves around in two different directions all the way up in the Sahara, as if you're wrapping, you know, the Sahara in a big curve, and empties out into the Mediterranean Ocean. And you build that through the Sahara because the idea, of course, is to irrigate all sides of this thing and to create a, you know, a vast area of just agricultural wealth, you know, because Africa as a continent has the capability of feeding the world. And so that's, you know, just one idea of the type of project and the type of infrastructure that is, you know, if we get this four-power solution going, of which the Schiller Institute conference is very, very, very important along those lines.
Speaking of this on the geography, the social geography, perhaps some of you want to speak of there's been the terrible conditions in which people have been forced to in the question of AIDS, malaria, and everything, mm-hmm. but the great wealth potential. What, Portia, in terms of Zimbabwe or at large, you may refer to that.
Well, in Zim, we've had the great fortune or misfortune, depending on how you look at it, of finding new diamonds recently. I mean, I think Africa is one of the places where you could be surprised by finding, you know, things like that in your backyard. I mean, this is the potential of wealth, and that's always attracted, of course, a lot of attention. But of course, in Zim, we call it Zim for short. You have, for example, a large a gas reserve that you have in Wange and in those areas, and you also have a lot of platinum, etc., things that in Africa itself you do not have the industrial potential to exploit in terms of, you know, using these types of resources for the people. You just don't have the factories, you just don't have the transportation system, etc. And it's interesting how these things work, because, you know, you had most of the railway lines developed in Africa in the colonial period, going from the interior to the coast, basically extracting mineral wealth and then taking it overseas for development. And Africans have had to import finished products of their own raw materials going out in order to do this. And Zimbabwe is a very good case in point, because, you know, you could say in terms of Africa as a whole, Africa was the first continent to become globalized. I mean, people think of globalization as something recent, or, you know, the trend going to the future or something like this. But, I mean, you know, we had, you know, the first, you know, multinationals coming in for mining. We had, you know, the population being used as slave labor, etc., which is something that you're getting now, factories going out to cheap labor countries and using basically the cheap labor there as having to basically manufacturing cheaper products. And one main instrument that has been used is something called SAP. Any African living in the northern part of Africa will know this. In Zimbabwe, it was known as ESAP, Economic Structural Adjustment Programs. It's basically the deal you get into with the IMF or the World Bank, under the, you know, the code words good governance, rule of law, human rights, or whatever. They'll give you this whole jargon. But what it basically means is, you know, breakdown of the healthcare system. For me, I remember when growing up in Zimbabwe, we used to have free healthcare. And when we, in the beginning of the 90s, got the conditionalities for getting money from the IMF through these structural adjustment programs, the first thing that we had to do, one of the first things, was having the removal of free education and free health care in order to cut down on government spending. This seems, you know, new for, you know, countries in Europe or so, talking about liberalization or whatever. But the key thing they talk about is reduction on government spending and, you know, removal of government subsidies on basic commodities, etc. But what they're really talking about is with the crisis of health care. And Zimbabwe, a country like Zimbabwe, as well as Botswana and things like this, they have the highest HIV infection rate. You're talking about people dying faster. And this is something that, you know, might sound shocking to some people, but this was willful. This was a willful practice of genocide that, you know, recently was taken up by the Anglo-American establishment with people like Kissinger, you know, talking about you don't want Africans, but you want, you know, the minerals, and the minerals belong to, you know, the U.S. or Europe. And you want to have less Africans so that you can get to the minerals, and they don't use them for themselves. And this is, you know, as I said, we were called Rhodesia before. This was his idea as he came and colonized Zimbabwe and named it after himself through a company, a private company that owned basically the nation. And so you talk about today in terms of globalization, cartelization, and these companies having more power than governments. This is, you're really talking about imperialism and nothing modern, but something very, very old and something outdated, I think, because I think the future lies in what Roosevelt was talking about in terms of sovereign nation states, and that is what Zimbabwe has attempted to do in addressing one of the key issues the oligarchy has used to keep Africa in its sway or under its power is the land issue. Who does the land belong to? And in Zimbabwe, we had 2% of the population owning 85% of all arable land, and that was something the Zimbabwe government tried to address, has addressed, and we were misbehaving, so we were told to cut it out, or we would have sanctions, or, well, not explicitly, they didn't say it explicitly, but they did do it, and since 2001, we haven't been allowed to borrow from any international institutions or do trade with any companies belonging to the IMF institutions, which basically means that they isolated the whole country. And I think in a certain sense, Becky, in this question in Tanzania recently, brought it out in a way that explains what I think the fight in Zimbabwe is about, because you hear more about Zimbabwe of late in the newspapers than you hear about, you know, the killings in Congo, for example, mass killings, genocide.
Right.
Because they're more interested in is what is happening in Zimbabwe going to spread and thus threaten their interests right now, as the financial system is collapsing and they really, really need to make sure that they get Zimbabwe in check and they keep people afraid. And Becky said in Tanzania recently that the fight against Zimbabwe is a fight against us all. Today it's Zimbabwe, tomorrow it will be South Africa, it will be Mozambique, or it will be Angola, or any other African country, and I think that's why it's such a big deal, you know. And that's something that if you're going to look at this whole question, I mean, a lot of people have read probably in the newspapers about Mugabe being some kind of demon or something, some tyrant, who babbles on about the British being evil. But if you look at, for example, in April 2007, that a State Department report came out that the U.S. government has, for example, been encouraging greater public debate by supporting organizations, be they religious organizations or political organizations like the opposition. They've been supporting them financially because they have been criticizing openly the government. So there has been a policy of regime change, and this is the question, you know, are you going to allow this to happen to Africa, or are you going to say, look, we're gonna stop this right now, the buck stops here. because at any rate, the system itself is coming down, and what's the alternative? So this I think is the issue of what's going on in Zimbabwe right now, and that's the bigger picture.
Portia, may I add to that? The case of the modern legacy of Cecil John Rhodes has been taken up lately by this man named Al Gore, who is also one of the big company owners and hedge fund managers
sure.
of our time. And in fact, in 98, he not only arranged the bombing of the only pharmaceutical plant in Sudan as vice president under Clinton, but he also in the same year, commanded Mbeki not to supply the South African population with cheap AIDS medicine. He said you have to respect the intellectual property rights for medicine, and prevented that what has been done in Brazil, a mass production of cheap AIDS medicine, retrovirus medicine, was distributed in the populations. We see in South Africa alone today, this is a number I have from 2003, that over 5 million people are infected by AIDS. It's probably much higher by now. If you compare, this is a country with 50 million people. If you compare this with Brazil, who has today around 190 million people, only around 60 or 70,000 people are infected by AIDS. And this is probably the big difference, is the question of the cheap AIDS antiviral medicine. So here we see how the great Zeus of our time, Al Gore, or how the financial gods of London are really saying, no, you cannot have technological development. No, you do not have access to the most modern medicine. No, you do not have access to technology, like Zeus prevented Prometheus to provide the access of knowledge to the people in the old Aeschylus drama. And I just wanted to put that in, because this is there is a big scandal right now, the British aerospace scandal, which is casting a light into the how these giant companies have been used to smuggle weapons, have been used to control governments very much on the African continent, organized in secret by the British government. And the scandal involves the oil for weapons deals by Prince Bandar. It goes back to Margaret Thatcher's government. It involves Tony Blair. It's a huge scandal where we see that billions of dollars are being channeled into weapons and secret armies behind the media, behind the populations, to control the continent and to extract weapons and minerals, to supply weapons and extract minerals. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when you look at it, you find out that actually even companies that were founded by Cecil Rhodes, as one of the colonizing founders, the founder of the British South African company, he found some of the big companies like Anglo American that he founded are today heavily involved in the weapons deals that involve certainly South Africa. And here we actually get a picture of the continued function of the British East Indian Company, the old colonizing policy, the role of the British Empire as it was founded over more than 200 years ago. And I think it's very important to keep in mind the role of the oligarchy and the Venetian game in this, and certainly the role of Lyndon LaRouche is currently playing to effectively attack the this part of the financial oligarchy who consciously are driving genocides around the planet, because in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. If we don't know what the enemy is really intending to do, we will fight in the blind. I would then ask, actually, maybe Samuel could just also tell us a little bit about the campaign, because I know in South Africa there has been a distribution and a campaign about against Al Gore and the and his scheme for a global warming tactic in South Africa. Maybe you, Samuel, maybe you could address this.
Yeah. Actually, what we did is we actually copied the materials that we got from you guys and began distributing these to the universities, local universities. And much of the people that read these things don't get back to us. You know, we try to, you know, organize them into, you know, some movements and all that. But I think much of university students are asleep. You know, but currently we had a small breakthrough in that a certain professor in West University received the disc Global Warming Hoax, which was aired in Channel 7, and which we gave to the students there, and they got back to us and they told me that told us that the professor was so shocked with the facts that were reflected in that CD, you know, but we don't have much luck, you know, in terms of receiving, you know, response from people, you know. But you know, yeah.
Hey Samuel, how? Tell us if you could. You know, is global warming very, very much being pushed in South Africa, and do a lot of people kind of prescribe to this whole religion?
No, not much. Not like in the West, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. One thing is, I think in order to force the issue, I think the global warming crowd even had one of their last big world meetings in Nairobi in Kenya, right? Within the last 2 years, just to broadcast from there, as if this is, it's a real, really fascist thing to say, we know that you know that we know it's not right, we're just going to come here and say this is the way it's going to be, right? But that's one example, right? Having it as a venue in Africa.
I think that's really sick, sorry, just to cut in, because, I mean, you know, the line is, and the most well-meaning people fought for this. They really go for this whole, yeah, and you know, Africa is going to be the most affected by global warming, and this is so terrible, they're going to have droughts and all this, you know, and the most well-meaning people who, you know, in general, you know, have good hearts and, I don't know, want to do good or whatever, they fall for this crap. Because what is at the core of it is a real racist ideology. You know, all the things, especially here in Europe, I can speak from having also organized in Europe for a couple of years now. You know, it really is some kind of you know, almost a spiritual thing to save nature from man. It's something that, you know, people, you know, spent their whole lives doing, you know, separating garbage and all of these kinds of things. But, you know, when you bring up the whole environmentalist ideology and you bring up the whole greenie ideology, that is advocating that, no, we're going to give Africa solar panels and windmills to develop, and we're going to kind of plaster the Sahara with windmills and this kind of thing. You know, it comes from the fact that they just really think that human beings are something bad. And, you know, these cute little kids, you know, in Africa running around naked with, you know, banana leaves in the background or something like this, that this is the way man should be in touch with nature. And none of them, if you ask them, none of them would be able to spend a week, you know, being in touch with nature, because you can't drink the water. You know, you get malaria, or you get, you know, cholera or something, or, you know, it's something that they can't even imagine sitting next to their laptops or something like this. But it really is a religion that has taken control, and it's something we have to attack viciously, because it's what is the barrier that you come up to most against when you say, look, we have to have massive industrialization of Africa, and that's the problem.
Yes, exactly right. I'd like to throw in here that something that everyone around the world should know, refer people to the website of LaRouchePub.com, LaRouchePub.com, or LaRouche PAC, the Political Action Committee in the United States, LaRouchePAC.com, because what, Portia, you've just said about this racism, in fact, these delusions, this craziness, is something that in particular is exposed in Lyndon LaRouche's new book that's been written and is available. It's posted. It's over 100 pages on the websites I just gave. It's called it's going to serve as a platform for the policy of the United States, the Democratic Party platform in particular. It's called The State of Our Union, The End of Our Delusion. So any delusions you may have, especially this greeny delusion stuff that Portia just exposed, this can help you get rid of it, or help your neighbor next door get rid of it, and
prepare for it to end.
This is the end of it, the end of these delusions and this. And I especially make a pitch to people to help give resources. The conference, which is mentioned, but the LaRouche Youth Movement has come together on the continent of Africa, which is a strategic breakthrough in itself for the future, for restoring civilization on the track to development again.
And I might add that it also makes the oligarchy shake in its boots.
Yeah,
very nervous.
Preparing a big meal for the whales by dumping Al Gore in the big oceans.
Because this crowd that's just been described, it's incredible. Bono was mentioned, you know, this microloans, or cook an egg in the middle of the desert with solar power. This stuff is beyond.
As somebody said, the whole crowd that believes that, homosexual salmon should have the right to smoke pot at their wedding.
But in the midst of all this, as you mentioned about minerals and all, let me just ask, even among besides Anglo-American, among these famous name companies, London Rhodesia, that is Lonro itself, is proclaiming they're back on the map in Africa. They're talking about water privatization. Is that right, Samuel or Portia?
Currently in Soweto, what these groups are trying to do is install water meters which will be opened by cars, you know, and people have been revolting against this, you know, by smashing all the pipelines, you know, that go to those, water transmitters and all that. You know, people are reacting very badly to this, you know. Now, the thing that we fear is that this thing can get out of line, you know, because the police are being sent there and, you know, they fire rubber bullets, you know, in the crowds and all that, you know. So we are very afraid that, you know, this thing can get out of hand, you know.
Right, and that is the and Lonro itself, or these kinds of privatizers or profiteers.
Yes, these kinds of profiteers, okay. You know.
They're the ones doing this.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a number of other questions here, but on the World Historic Bering Strait Conference, it's, again, I mentioned September 15 and 16. It's in Germany, it's near Frankfurt, and you can find on the Schiller Institute website a special long description of this, and people can arrange to go, but people could also help in resources, fund a delegation like as that from Africa, from the Americas, from Asia, and elsewhere, because the timing of this is so critical. But let me ask you, right there in South Africa or in Scandinavia or Europe, do you have certain other benchmark events or campaigns or initiatives that you're thinking of being involved in, or is your horizon point, especially in September, it's only 2.5 weeks away? For organizing, I mean.
We are launching here constantly meetings. Our organizers are up to the beat with meetings in Berlin and in Copenhagen and Stockholm. Mm-hmm. It's all, but the main event will be the 15th and 16th. So there are, we have had all summer in Berlin town hall meetings for people to come to, where in the networks that we are already in contact with, and all people who get into contact with us at the book tables and through our publications and through this show, they have a chance to come in and actually meet the organizers and meet the campaign and take the first step to begin to organize themselves to bring other people into contact with us.
Mm-hmm. And from the United States side, we're also, I believe we've been able to, the organization up in the Northwest, I don't want to say General Atomics, I forget.
General Atomics is in California, it's in the Pacific Coast, correct.
I'm talking about a group up in Seattle, I can't think of
the name. Oh, I see. Well, their number, that's a big center, because they've had Boeing, mm-hmm. the Army Corps of Engineers, and all this grouping, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, without mentioning that, there's a lot of different individuals that we're organizing here from the United States to be able to go over there. I just wanted to stress to the listeners that you know, being here in the war room and getting the various reactions and things from the population, this conference that's occurring couldn't come at a better time in history. Because what we're getting is that, one, you know, congressmen are being run out of their town hall meetings. One guy, Congressman Davis, Burke, Virginia, actually created a town hall meeting in which he wanted to debate and show his constituencies why he continued to support the Iraq War. Well, his constituency, essentially lynched him in one way or another. And as they were shutting the meeting down, one of the guys stood up and said, "We haven't discussed anything that we need to discuss in this town hall meeting." And so, you know, you have that kind of phenomenon happening all over the country. And at the same time, universal, agreement from all sectors of the population, what LaRouche is saying in launching this Homeowners Recovery Act and also the Economic Recovery Act and things of that nature, the Homeowners Foreclosure Act.
Yeah, let's just, because that's come just in the last few days, since our mm-hmm. last LaRouche show, but the name of what you just mentioned, and everyone should get this on the website of the LaRouche Political Action Committee. It's for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act of 2007.
Mm-hmm. But also, so people are gravitating more, especially within the state level of the United States, within the local level in terms of politics, are gravitating more towards what we're doing. And this is also happening internationally with, you know, the significance of LaRouche's relationship to the country of Russia, you know, and what goes on in Europe and things of that nature. So put all this together and then realize at the same time that, the War Room is launching a project, a counterintelligence project, because, you know, as this is going on and LaRouche's ideas and leadership becomes more prominent, of course he's going to be attacked by very, very high-level individuals like Richard Mellon Scaife, who is the one that not only funded the Get LaRouche Task Force and the John Train Salons, but also the attacks on Bill Clinton and the whole impeachment Monica Lewinsky nonsense. And so, you know, you have these circles reacting because, number one, they don't want anything close to Hillary Clinton or the Clinton name to come into the presidency. But, of course, they don't want LaRouche anywhere near influence as the system crashes, right, and as things go to hell. They don't want him anywhere near, you know, the possibility of creating a situation in which you have a new FDR. So you put this all together, and Helga and the Schiller Institute and LaRouche in Europe are organizing this conference that is going to be debating, and I mean, you know, we'll see what comes out of it, but really looking into this four-power solution, into the Eurasian land bridge, the Bering Strait tunnel, and projects of development that if every country in the world were to have the right to economic self-determination, in other words, the right to their own American revolution, then we could start launching immediately to bring, you know, to bring the economy back with a vengeance and to totally stave off this kind of crash. And that it's absolutely significant for the future of a continent like Africa.
May I just add that we do have an ongoing campaign in Europe for the new Bretton Woods, the call from Helga Sepp-LaRouche, to establish the new financial system, Bretton Woods, that has already been signed by a long line of politicians and members of parliaments and people of importance and people who are just statesmen and are concerned about the situation around the globalization. So we are relaunching the call for a new Bretton Woods, and there are certainly institutional calls being made. I'm speaking right now from Copenhagen in Denmark, where a new round of also calls to the parliament has been initiated. And I would just mention from here, where we are in the middle of the Schiller Institute is campaigning with around LaRouche's ideas, preparing for a coming election campaign, with the proposal to build a new bridge, magnetic levitated train. I think this was on the LaRouche show last week or the week before that.
Very recently, yes. Thank you.
Right. And this campaign is just up and going. It's very popular in the population. There's a big sentiment for this. You cannot convince people not to build new bridges. And and the reactions on the street are, yeah, why shouldn't we? If we are building a bridge, then why shouldn't we go with the magnetic levitated train? Why shouldn't we take the most modern magnetic train? But as is the case with Africa and is the case with the new financial system, of course, we have to remember up front, Dick Cheney has to go. And, get Cheney out first, and we can do all these things. So we bring that up on the pickets, and there's a tremendous reaction to it.
And yeah. What? Go ahead, Portia.
No, I just wanted to say also, just adding on to that, is the question of the whole Eurasian land bridge idea is not just a question of building a train. I think people who have very little knowledge in economics should not only read LaRouche, but should also think about, for now, is the question of peace. Because, you know, if you're going to build this thing, this involves cooperation, multilateral, long-term agreements. You're going to have, you know, you're going to put youth to work that used to, you know, do drugs, or they used to, you know, be involved in, you know, as soldiers, children who were soldiers in war, and you're going to give people a future, because these are, maglev is not only fast, but it's the best technology around. You're going to have to upgrade the whole economy to match that. You're going to have to, you know, give people homes. They're going to live near where they're going to work. This is a project for the next 50 years. And then the children dying with 2 years in Sudan because of war or famine or whatever, that could be your next Einstein. That could be, these are the scientists of the future. You could have, you know, amazing cooperation for space projects. You know, Congo is, you know, being on the equator, they have the resources for making, you know, the best rockets and the best observatories in the world. You know, this is, it's incredible, the potential of this project, the gateway to a whole new world, a whole new order of peace. And I think people who don't know where this thing could go with the crisis, I think they should grab the chance of going with LaRouche on this, because it's just incredible.
Yeah, I'll throw in a little advance notice. I've had the pleasure of working on some of the advance work for the conference. And just the vision that you say, I'll give you a concrete example. There's a youngish man up in Yukon, up in northwest Canada, who cannot make the conference. His passion and specialty is tunnels. And, of course, the Bering Strait Tunnel is a major one, is it not? But he has in mind 158 priority tunnels of the world, not all of which are for transportation. Take the water tunnel in Africa that could be used on the Ubangi, or one of the tributaries off the Zaire River, the Congo Basin that was just mentioned, that could, because you would probably take a tunnel, not to waste any water, through the mountains into Lake Chad. You wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And so think of those 158 tunnels and the priority ones that have to be in Africa. And this is, as you said, this is not a mechanistic thing. We are not talking about mere trains. In the terms of canals, I just can't help but react to what you say. You know, when you think of music and the social change, and I threw in music, but the cultural change that, by returning to science, when the Panama Canal was built, leave aside the imperial question about that was associated with certain aspects of this, like the Suez Canal. But when the Panama Canal was being built to provide a way through the Americas, my great uncle served in the orchestra. That's what he did the whole time for 3 years. So we have a lot of new orchestras that we could open up.
Sure.
And let me just say, in our final 12 minutes or something, it's totally open for anyone to throw in something here. But from those from and in Africa right now, are there any particular lessons you want to bring out, including the negative side, like the precursors to the economic hitmen from the Cecil Rhodes days or the South Africa Company? Any lessons like that, or any other points about the future that we look to end this kind of phase of history?
Well, I just want to pick up on something that Simon said earlier about the question of the oligarchy, because I don't know, you know, if people listening have really gone into this concept in depth, because someone like Rhodes, he sincerely believed that the British were just a superior race of being or something. You know, he sincerely believed that they were destined to conquer the world, and this is something that Aeschylus goes through, or if you look at the mentality of the Olympian gods, you know, or the bankers that thought they were, you know, they had an infallible system and they were walking on top of the world, you know, this idea that there's some people born to rule and there's some people that are just, you know, there to serve and they're just there to maintain a certain type of lifestyle. How this is connected, you know, to the whole question of, you know, where does you know, how do we get to have a world where 2/3 of the world population is living in the most horrible conditions you could imagine? How do we get here? Sometimes, if you think about it, if it doesn't bother you, there's a problem. But if you know in your heart that, you know, this isn't right, and you think about where it comes from, you know, you have these kind of guys who think like Rhodes, but at the same time, you also have, you know, it in yourself that you secretly admire people like this. You know, people think about, you know, how they could spend their whole life having a normal job, or they could just, you know, throw it all into the stock markets and, you know, win more money in a few minutes than, you know, they ever made, you know, in their whole entire life of having a decent day's work. And I think that what we're having to deal with in terms of Africa and how we're going to, you know, deal with how if Africa is going to get a future, if we're going to actually go with the Eurasian Land Bridge and the New Bretton Woods, it's not just an economic question, but I think it's also a very deep culture question that, you know, everybody has to examine for themselves and work through for themselves. Because the whole oligarchical question is a question of, you know, do you know how beautiful it is to be human? And, you know, you brought up the music question, Marsha. I think this is very, very important that, you know, LaRouche goes into classical art and classical drama, giving us the lessons that we can work through and understand what is really at stake here, what really brings whole civilizations down. We're at the brink of going into a dark age today. And I think Africa is not even a separate issue from whether or not we can, you know, get out of this crisis. Is not, you know, some extra thing, but it's really intimately entwined in the fact that if we don't do this, then as an entire civilization, we're not fit to survive. And that's something that, you know, if you look at these Rhodes guys and Milner, they were part of the Round Table in South Africa. You know, they orchestrated the Boer War, where they were the first people to put people in concentration camps, women and children, forced labor. This is not something that is just a question of, you know, people who are greedy, but the image of man, it's disgusting, it's horrible. And that's where you get people like Cheney. And so I think this is the real issue about dealing with, you know, how if like LaRouche said in his recent webcast, if you know, Africa cannot afford, you know, having the railway systems, but you just have to give it to them, because in the future, you're creating markets for Europe as well that could, you know, Europeans need to make high technologies, and they'll be useless for the rest of the world if they don't continue to do that for the Chinese, etc. And this is an issue for everybody to think about. Are we fit to survive mm-hmm. as a civilization? This is something I just wanted to throw out.
Yeah, it also there's a huge significance in terms of a youth movement starting in Africa, right? Because to to counter this Zeusian principle, as opposed to a Promethean principle, right? To counter this kind of insanity that you're talking about, in the standpoint of the oligarchy, you have to have a youth movement that's dedicated to the study of Bach and Kepler,
mm-hmm.
and showing the people within these kinds of dire situations what it means actually to be a human being. And that's absolutely been key to the recruitment all over the country and all over the world for the youth movement as a whole. In that light, the starting of a youth movement in South Africa is very, very exciting for countering this kind of madness.
And Zimbabwe too.
Oh yeah, Zimbabwe.
We have a couple of young people there that are really excited about Kepler and
uh-huh.
and Bach.
And may I say, in Mozambique, we also—I just spoke to Kasamo, who's now very excited about getting the existing youth we have in Mozambique involved also. and I just brings to my mind the words of a guy like Gandhi, who was active in Africa and who said, injustice everywhere, anywhere, injustice anywhere will threaten the justice everywhere, and it's true. Human civilization, we will not be able to make the necessary cognitive breakthroughs if it's in defeating AIDS and a cancer or coming epidemies, but also in the question of the frontier in space to conquer the solar system, to make breakthroughs to in fusion energy that will allow us to finally go to the big planets, Jupiter and Saturn. Yeah, all of these projects are there and waiting for us to go there, but we need to bring up the living standard, the cognitive living standard for the lower 80% of the world population to actually have the density of ideas and the cognitive precondition to be able to do this. So we will not get ahead if people think we can get ahead somewhere if we don't have everybody with us. So it just doesn't work the way the system of globalization has failed, and the system of economy as we know it today has failed utterly. And it's just good that we change it, because it has these wonderful prospects.
Yeah, and before the hour's over, I want to give for the those in the United States a toll-free number for those that are listening by telephone later and so forth. Dial this number to connect with this, to support it and so forth. It's 1-800-929-7566. That's 1-800-929-7566, especially in the countdown to the blowout is taking place, but the countdown to the September 15 and 16 World Conference that's located in Germany. And it's not too late if you want to go, but check that number. And I think what, as far as the kinds of outlook that Portia was talking about, Milner, Cecil Rhodes, these people, I just throw in that there's a fast read of a book called The Victorian Generals on China Gordon up in Khartoum, and all of these quick profiles of this kind of mentality that you have just described,
yeah,
that is the Chaniac outlook that we're facing today.
Also, you don't want to overlook probably the most brutal process of colonialization, which occurred in Africa, which was the case of Belgium and the Congo at the same time.
But looking ahead to what the potential is, first I want to say something. You've all mentioned other countries. You know, here in Washington, D.C., it's like Berlin or Paris or certain places, Toronto, Montreal. Especially there are people here from the Horn of Africa because of all the terrible dislocation there in Somalia, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. And I understand there have been meetings with the LaRouche Youth Movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, I'm not so certain of the specifics, but there is an organization in Washington D.C. that is associated, I think even founded by one of the individuals who is instrumental in writing the Eritrean Constitution, who is now in exile here in the United States. And we've been able to, with our youth movement organizers on the ground, attend these different kinds of meetings that they're doing in Washington. And a couple of them there have developed a pretty good contact base, plus our contact base that's always existed through the work of Larry Freeman and others with the diplomatic community here in Washington, D.C., in terms of Africans.
So a week from now, on September 1st, that's Labor Day weekend in the United States, and it marks, every week is marking a new collapse phase in the financial side and a new opportunity for new Bretton Woods. But in the United States, the Congress is going to return September 4th. And everyone should make sure and stay tuned to the show, the LaRue Show. And now that we have our final couple minutes, I'll let anyone who volunteers, of course, Samuel, you are in South Africa right now, if you want to have the last word as far as what you're looking towards or anything to make clear to the world at large about the LaRouche youth movement in Africa.
Yes, right now we are strongly, we need support right now from anyone who wants to help us develop the youth movement in South Africa, because we don't have material. We strongly need support, in whichever way, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yes, basically to develop ourselves and also to have, equipment. You know, because what we do, we distribute material, the small amount that we have, it's not enough,
That's right, and I'm sure Portia and Simone, you'd add the same thing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Definitely.
Okay, well, I want to thank you all for being on the show, and that still stay on Portia Torumbwa, who's speaking from Scandinavia, from Zim, and Samuel Lapelle, who's in South Africa in Johannesburg, Simone Jensen, who's speaking to us from Denmark, and of course here we have Lewis Wilden from the LaRouche War Room and from many other places. And everyone, we want, now I'm focusing on those active here in the United States, to pitch in on the getting to every village, Middlesex, and town, the counties, the towns, the cities, on this emergency action that's on nominally on the question and literally to deal with the housing crisis. I mentioned the homeowners. I mentioned this particular piece of draft legislation, the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act of 2007.
Yeah, go right to your city councils, right to your local governments everywhere.
And this is the kind of thing that was just mentioned about Gandhi. We are going to, this microcosm is actually part of forcing the shift in the world back to the economic development perspective. It's like picking up from 50 years ago, which someone said, the FDR approach to Africa. So that's the end of our time. Anyone, any last word, or we'll say, we'll speak again September 1st.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you all. And goodbye. And this is signing off August 25, 2007. This is the LaRue Show. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Bye.